as day-to-day vegans go, they seem pretty nice. Vegans Inc., however, is not nice. They're bullies. There's a line between eating vegan and demanding everyone else do also. One Veganism Inc. website, Plant-Based News, reposted a claim about agriculture land use for animals, and I challenged them on the source. That is, in part, this episode, my answer to their claim. But there's also more. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 175.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Hello, folks. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Education matters. The quality of education matters. Is it possible your kids in the government schools are not getting the best education they can? If you've thought about homeschooling and thought it was better but didn't know where to start, start here. The Ron Paul Homeschool Curriculum. Use my affiliate link to learn why this self-taught program is the best choice for your family. Save your sanity with homeschooling at this link, culinarylibertarian.com/homeschool. Plant-Based News is both a website and a Twitter account for vegan activism. Like any decent activist, they combine news with propaganda. I'm fine with that. It happens all the time. It gives me a reason to look into some of their claims and push back. This is the pushback on one such claim they made. Now, in fairness to them, they just repeated it. OurWorldInData.org was the source. To Plant-Based News credit, they did provide the link when I asked them to support their claim. The assertion was the first line of the blog post on OurWorldInData.org, which reads, quote, "Livestock takes up nearly 80% of global agricultural land, yet produces less than 20% of the world's supply of calories," end quote. Well, that's big if it's true. The webpage provides a bar graph showing Earth's surface is 29% land, 149 million square kilometers, and 71% oceans, 361 million square kilometers. Of that 29% of land, 71% is habitable, or about 104 million square kilometers. Okay, about half, 51 million square kilometers, of the 71% of habitable land is used for agriculture, with the balance of land being made up of forests and shrubs and urban and built-up land and freshwater and stuff. So, 50% of 71% of 29% of land is used for livestock, identified by them mostly as meat and as cows and mutton. Now, they made a point about excluding pigs and chickens. But in that, they included dairy. So meat, cows, and mutton, and dairy. It's a lot of numbers. It gets better, but we have to go through this a little bit more. Of the 50% of land used for agriculture, 77%, 40 million square kilometers, is used for livestock, meat and dairy. Based on their calculations and my math, which could be wrong, I admit it, agricultural land for livestock is about 27% of the Earth's surface. land surface. 23% of the land, 11 million square kilometers, is used for crops. Now, I did say that's a lot of numbers. It can be mind-numbing, but there's a point in this madness. After just a little bit more about some numbers. Our world and data claims that based on the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, 18% of the global calorie supply comes from the livestock and 83% of the global calorie supply comes from plant-based foods or plants. It's big if it's true. My initial reaction to that claim was, it seemed improbable. It is easy to visualize what part of the earth is habitable. And what part is not. North and South Pole, not so much. The deserts aren't ideal. Mountains are debatable as to whether or not they're habitable, and I guess the deserts are debatable too. If you live in the U.S. and have flown over Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, or anything else there in the mid-states that politicians like to avoid, there's a lot of plants. Even in Nevada, there's giant crop circles. There's stuff growing in the mountains. There's plants. So if you fly over those states, or if you're in Michigan, you see lots and lots and lots of corn. Now you also see cattle. So even after reading their page, that claim remains to me improbable. But there is at least one other issue. The claim is the global calorie supply is inadequate to the poor since they don't have as much meat as the rich. Now, I don't think that the claim that the poor don't have as much meat is wrong. I think that the calorie count is the problem. The equitable, and we're going to get to that, the equitable distribution of meat is not our world and data's goal. By stating calories as the goal, not nutrients or macronutrients, they focus on the wrong thing, in my opinion. Anthony Davies, the Words in Number podcast economist and former guest on this show, noted that trees could provide more than enough calories for the world for years and years without replanting. Problem solved. Calories for everyone. Now, I realize that it's a silly response. Of course, no one's going to eat trees for sustenance. Anthony did offer two more points, and I'll read them. He writes, quote, India and China likely drive the results for two reasons. One, together they comprise more than one-third of the world's population, and two, they're currently consuming among the least calories. Duplicating what they are doing across the rest of the world would mean imposing significant hardship. As with every doom and gloom prognosis, this one ignores technology and markets. Over the past 200 years, we have managed to reduce world hunger from 98% to less than 10% in the same time that the world population increased by 700%. Technology, driven by markets, achieved this. They will go on achieving this as the world's caloric intake continues to rise, end quote. Now, I mentioned the Words and Number podcast. They also have a Facebook group, and I crowdsourced some responses to the sketchy math used to reach the conclusions about land use. Several group members offered some good information. Here's one comment. Quote, another funny thing they did, they included milk in with meat. Now, that brings up a whole new conversation, but for many people, even vegetarians, milk consumption is permissible. It looks like they threw in dairy with meat to confuse the picture. As an aside, I recently learned that cow milk production has changed dramatically in the last 50 years. In the 1970s, the average cow produced about 500 pounds of milk per year, about 600 gallons. Today, the average cow produces 21,000 pounds, about 2,500 gallons of milk per year. And in one report, they succeeded in having a cow produce almost four times that, or 8,000 gallons a year. So, there's certainly reason to expect additional technological improvements, end quote. Excluding milk and milk products, yogurt and cheese and kefir primarily, excludes a lot of fat and protein sources. It also excludes a lot of pleasure in eating. This is not a thing you can measure, but part of the joy, maybe a great deal of the joy of eating, is flavor. I will share one last crowdsourced comment which seems relevant to the discussion of land use. This person wrote, quote, "I think it has a lot to do with how much land it actually takes to graze cattle. However, it's not environmentally feasible to grow veggies, etc. on that land. It's usually very poor, drought-prone land, which is one reason cattle ranches need that much land. If they are all vegans slash vegetarian, they are trying to make meat look evil and imply that the land is wasted that way, when it would take a ridiculous amount of water and infrastructure to get any other kind of production from that land," end quote. Land that can't be used for growing plants because it's too rocky or too far from water or too expensive to make fertile and useful is a valid point. Milk and milk products are good sources of nutrition for a lot of people. Cow milk is a big target, but goats also offer milk, and more than a few goat milk cheese makers have built a fine life selling goat milk. Vegan Inc. comes across as pretty ruthless. They behave like central planners, seemingly happy to judge the non-vegans as filthy animal murderers, and appear to have no problem telling you how to live your life as they see it. The average vegan seems far less militant. I interviewed Khalil on this show. I've known Khalil for years, and he was a vegan when we worked together. We ate differently and shared meal time, just not meals. We ate in peace. I suspect most vegans prefer peace over protest, but I don't know. The initial takeaway from this article is meat consumption needs to be reduced to achieve the goals they say are necessary. There's another read to it. There is a war on meat. There has been for some while. Cow farts. Remember that from AOC? The Our World in Data post was written in 2017. In the piece, they discuss yields in meat and grain increasing, but also the population increasing, and try to land the punch with this. Quote, "By 2050, we will have a further 2 to 3 billion people to feed," end quote. Okay, that's reasonable. Looking to the future is a good idea, and I have no reason to doubt their mathematical prognostication, and a long view is a good idea, but I question this idea as their idea. The World Economic Forum published an online article in 2016 called "We Must Eat Less Meat. Could These Three Alternatives Help Save Our Planet?" This passage reveals how they intend to take meat out of the equation as a source of climate change. It's always climate change. They write, quote, "Part of the solution is around reducing demand for livestock, and we are beginning to see lower levels of meat consumption in the developed world with, for example, 25% of U.S. consumers decreasing meat intake in 2014. We are also beginning to see government action aimed at reducing citizens' meat consumption. For example, the Chinese government recently announced plans to reduce its citizens' meat consumption by 50%, while countries such as Denmark are having active consultations on the introduction of the red meat tax. We can expect similar legislative programs in other jurisdictions in the years to come, end quote. Did you catch that? Taxing meat. In a way, the price increases due in part to inflation are taxes on meat. Inflation is a tax on your current cash since purchasing goods requires more green pieces of paper. Back on episode 155, I did an episode about an Oregon group that wants to put an end to the meat business in Oregon. They also want to put an end to hunting and fishing in Oregon. A proverbial line in the sand has been drawn years ago. Vegan or animal murderer? There is passion and propaganda on both sides. I myself am a keto fan and eat mostly keto. I see it has helped me lose some of my belly. Now, I know people who have had health turnarounds on keto. That's a good thing. People eating themselves into wellness and healthfulness is good. To build on my previous statement, I suspect most vegans are happy you're happy, which probably also means they don't really care if you're not, because not their problem. It is the militant side that is the problem. If keto folks were demanding that you give up wheat for a T-bone, I would oppose that too. Central planning, top-down, one-size-fits-all is never the answer to any question unless it's on a game show. Hey, I'll take that wasn't real central planning for a billion, Mayim. Expecting a government to know the wants of all the people is just plain stupid. But, more to the point, do you think the government that 2 years ago said 15 days to flatten the curve is the right choice for deciding how best to feed 350 million people? Frankly, the war on meat is also a war on the humans. The militant vegans seem to have no problem with compromising human health and wellness, and the war on humans has many fronts. Food is just one, but it's a good one to fight. Opposing central planners and their agents, and Veganism Incorporated is one such agent, are good fights. Who are we fighting? That's a good question. The World Economic Forum holds an annual convention in Davos, Switzerland every year, except last year. This year, I'm going to say her name wrong, Gary Woods, who is the founding dean of the Blavatnik School of Government and is professor of global economic governance at Oxford University, said, quote, "The good news is the elite across the world trust each other more and more," end quote, and then shared what she saw as the bad news. Quote, "The bad news is that the majority of people trusted the elite less," end quote. Now, take a moment and collect yourself that she said the quiet part out loud and recognize that this is just a game to them. By game, I don't mean play for entertainment. I mean they use people as pawns on the quest for global one-world governance. Come on, Reed. Sounds preposterous, doesn't it? Come on, that's just, your tinfoil hat is slipping. This is from the intelligence.weforum.org page. Quote, "Global governance is a means to manage issues that cut across national borders, whether it is a pandemic, a financial crisis, climate change, or a geo-economic dispute, though traditionally centered on diplomacy and international organizations, a wide variety of public and private actors now engage in cross-border governance. The work itself has expanded well beyond treaty making to include formal and informal monitoring, standard setting, enforcement, and financing. Effective governance is essential to secure peaceful, healthy, and prosperous societies, particularly now amid COVID-19, worsening ecological crises, mounting geopolitical tension, and growing nationalist backlash against globalization, end quote. You still think it's crazy? Growing nationalist backlash against globalization. How dare you little peons dare think for and act in your own best interest? Isn't that what he just said? We've come quite a way from how much land do cows use. Now, remember the old joke, which is oddly placed here. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. How do we get the world to change behavior? 2 weeks at a time. The issue isn't choosing a vegan diet. If you want it, do it. The issue, pushed by a select few, mostly self-appointed, through rather impressive propaganda means, is to make choices for you. You like meat, they'll ask. Well, you can have nothing, or you can have this plant-based, highly processed, manufactured thing. So, see, they'll give you a choice, but you can't choose not to participate. Now, if you just heard Geddy Lee there, you're right. But choosing not to decide means starving. Is that a choice, or is that coercion? This topic is nearly endless. It is worth discussing at times because those who push for it aren't going to stop. So, push back. I admit I have been a bit down by the magnitude of this force. They're organized, exceedingly well-funded, and seem to be everywhere. But look at the news. Not the mainstream news, of course, about the global resistance to lockdowns and the resistance to jab mandates and the resistance to passport mandates. I mentioned Rush a moment ago. Now it's Dee Snider and Twisted Sister. Collectively, the world is saying, we're not going to take it anymore. You can sing it yourself. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I'll add a link to the Oregon War on Meat episode to the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/175. On that show notes page, I'll also add a link to the episode with Jose Nino about the general war on meat, which was recorded a couple of years ago, but it seems very plainly that war is still being waged. And I will add a link to the Our World in Data page that I used and that the plant-based news people used, so you can read it yourself. It isn't that long, and it's not that technical. It's written for the lay audience, which is good, because that's me. Thank you so much for listening. I do appreciate that. Please share this episode link on your social media feeds. That'll get more ears on the podcast. And this is, I think, an important issue. Is it crazy to ask you to visit the support page and help to support the show? Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.